And welcome, dear listeners. Welcome to this, if we can call it like a Christmas Eve-ish broadcast here on your number one talk radio station. Obviously, implying as well as also that, you know, the home run is also a Christmas Eve, particular broadcast session. If you don't know what Christmas Eve is, or if they use the word Eve, it's literally the day before the day. That signals it. So, for example, if you wish to say Independence Day Eve or Independence Eve, it would have been the 20th of March, day before the 21st, just highlighting that aspect of English, in our particular talk. Don't worry, guys, it's nothing particularly serious, just helping you with the nuances of the English language, which is primarily, not indigenous to our country, but hey, we're not complaining. Well, welcoming you once again, dear listeners, as we once again are, working through the particular holiday programming here on your number one talk radio station, as many of you have made your particular treks across the country. These treks could be anything from going to the coast, going down south, or going east or to the north. And primarily, well, we know where the coast is. The coast is westwards. Don't worry about the directions. But in that particular notion, obviously, you have to remember that there is still a new year to see, where we have to see each other, and primarily let's see each other in that new particular time frame that obviously starts from the 1st of January 2025. Now, just before we start off, do remember, dear listeners, you can listen to us on the Eagle FM application, which is free to download on both the Google and the Apple platforms. Also remember that there is still your conventional radio set, and ensure that you are tuned in to the correct frequencies throughout the particular geographic locations where you might find yourself, where we as Eagle FM obviously bring you our particular unique program to on a daily basis. And alternatively, or lastly, there's always the opportunity for you to listen to us by streaming through our website specifically. Yes, it is a streaming function. By listening to us through our website, where you just have to Google search us at Eagle FM Namibia. And remember, click on it. If you're working through your PC or through a computer or through a laptop, it's a big play button that you'll see on the, interacting on the web page. If it's through your mobile device, it's a small audio button. It looks like a speaker. Small audio button that you've got to enable in order to enjoy your favorite programming during the course of these holiday programming aspects. Now. I am particularly excited for today's particular discussion because if you have seen the poster on social media for today's The Home Run, it is talking about the lost potential or the undiscovered potential of the retail sector. Now, dear listeners, there is no such industry that carries through the end product of what producers, value addition providers, manufacturers, factory owners, the employees in those particular aspects, as well as also the transport companies, the warehouse and storage companies affiliated to this, and the distributors who distribute to these outlets, to these end points, they would not function without these particular points. Well, there is actually a template that existed before this, that actually saw the smaller versions, the breaking up versions of these particular institutions prior, way back in history, that literally led to an amalgamation. Well, you can call it like an amalgamation. You can call it sort of like a coming together aspect as well. But these particular businesses, all of them known as the retail sector business, they obviously were at one stage, firstly, a community store. At one stage, firstly, they were someone's initiative that just sprang up. They contacted family and friends and said, "Hey, listen, you know what? I've got a business idea. I'd like to open up a physical brick and mortar business selling this particular product or, stocking these particular aspects." I'm someone that read a lot of cowboy books, Western books. Obviously, it's a habit I inherited from my older brothers and from my father, who, loved reading this particular genre. And while it's not to say that Africa did not have a Wild West back then, they actually did have a Wild West back then. It's not just the Americans that owned it. The Australians also had a similar thing, and the South Americans. But in that particular notion, in the Wild West, there was this one particular business venture that was known as a general store. Now, guys, I know I'm of a different particular kind of an age bracket, but even if you were someone that played the video game known as Red Dead Redemption, RDR, as its other name is also known as, for those of you that are obviously of the tech-savvy branch of things, if you've ever played that game, Red Dead Redemption, which is by far considered still the best Western, the best game after the Grand Theft Auto titles, you would have interacted with a particular business entity within the game itself known as a general store. Now, back then, general stores sold everything in these frontier areas in various parts of the world. So I'm talking, like I mentioned, it would have been Oceania, specifically Australia. It would have been here in Southern Africa, obviously with the gold boom and with Cecil John Rhodes, you know, doing his gallivanting, obviously trying to find the particular precious minerals and precious materials and precious gems, obviously, you know, to claim that for the British crown. It would have been in South America. It would have been in the undiscovered parts of North America. And primarily, general stores were the linkages to the far reaches of many of these far-flung rural communities back then. Now, yes, I'm giving you a poetic illustration of a situation of something, of a particular installation in a community back then that provided much value to a community. I'm not talking about your. I'm not talking about a bar or a saloon, or even a hotel. Even though a hotel and a general store technically complemented each other, even though the hotel was within the saloon, as its previous name, that's a bar, as its previous name was, or it later on became the bar, because the hotel had accommodation at the top end of it. One of those particular installations I saw the other day during the course of the elections, that's on 27 November, I drove through Commerzdal because I was trying to, you know, provide coverage from Commerzdal voting stations or polling stations in the Commerzdal area. And I drove past one of the most iconic places within the Commerzdal area that I also used to, you know, walk past. Let me just say that. You know, I won't reveal, you know, past behaviors. Walked past, or would travel past, or, you know, commute past, was an installation by the name of the Star Hotel. Many people would know, obviously, if you're a Windhoek native, you would know of this particular installation. And just to be met with the derelict structure that it today is. Yes, it's a derelict structure. It's got broken windows. Its roof had been torn down. I don't know what happened. It's shuttered up, meaning its doors are closed, it's locked up and all that stuff, but the property itself is derelict. Now, you could tell me, but yeah, Dwight, who cares about a previous, you know, establishment like that? Well, here's the thing. Businesses, specifically businesses within the retail sector, within the community level sector, meaning businesses that can operate within the community level, do carry a lot of particular economic value. Why do I say economic value? Because the thinking for you to go to, for example, a mall in anywhere in Namibia, and like I illustrated to you just before we started off on this afternoon's discussion, is that many of you find yourselves outside of Windhoek. For those of you that are Windhoek natives, or that you work in Windhoek, but you've gone back to, you know, where you grew up and where you live, or you've gone to visit family, wherever you find yourself across the country, and over there the picture is way more different than the picture here in Windhoek. Now, if you've ever asked yourself the question, nou hoekom lyk 'n ding so en hy lyk nie so nie? For those obviously that are not, you know, Afrikaans proficient, what I just said there was, why does the picture look like this here, but it cannot look like this here? And this, primarily, dear listeners, has nothing to do with the notion of land ownership. It has nothing to do with it. Yes, to a limited degree. Yes, to a limited degree. But this is actually one of the most important and one of the most carrying value propositions that will ever exist in the modern world. You see, as Namibia is trying to find its particular feet with this new age of industrialization, with this new age of trying to find a different economic footing within which that you can ensure the economic prosperity cascades to every corner and to every household and to every individual in the country, this is growing pains that we are going through. This is. Because the definitions by which we were operating under prior to, let's say, the former president Geingob's first term, his first term, so that's everything before 2014, the particular things we were trying to do up until 2014 just didn't cut it. The way we were going about doing things was just not cutting it. And you can see this specifically. You could see this by 2014. None of us. Did you hear of anything known as climate change? No. We were told by 2013, this is the start of a drought. Okay, it's a drought. Not knowing that weather is literally a universal linked system or ecosystem. So that if something happens somewhere else in the world, it happens over here in Namibia. Hence, no human can control the weather. Even if you come and talk to me about cloud seeding, it's a limited impact method. It's limited. It's not even truly endorsed by many particular weather scientists, because they'll tell you, we don't know what you're doing. We don't know what effects or impacts it will cause. We don't know if, for example, trying to alleviate drought and there's certain particular, because how cloud seeding works, dear listeners, is that you need a specific kind of a cloud. And it's two of them. They are known as the rain-making clouds. You need two of these particular clouds. I won't bore you with the particular Latin terminology or the Latin names of these clouds. These clouds, you don't know technically what you're going to create or cause if you go around cloud seeding. Because the idea is still out there, it exists. Perhaps the rain was not meant for you or for that spot. For example, just like for today. I know I'm on a weather, I'm off on a weather tangent here, dear listeners, but just bear with me. Because just like today, Namibia is supposed to have, according to the Google weather analysis that I've got on my phone, that we're supposed to see, thunderstorms. But the clouds are literally here on your way to Okahanya outwards. Which should indicate to any person that, yes, there's a part of Koma's region that also connects into the Ochodonchupa region, which is the part just outside of Windhoek leading into the Ochodonchupa region. So within that particular analysis or observation itself, the idea primarily of something like dealing with systems that, you know, we did not know of prior to 2014 is now our mainstay subject matter today. Just for example, coming into the discussion, which I am much, much, much happy about to talk about, in terms of the lost potential in which we are not seeing the true value of the retail sector. Now, dear listeners, earlier in this year, we had discussions specifically looking at the retail sector, food retail and the other retail aspects. Food retail provides the mechanism by which you can have or achieve or access so much value. Let me repeat that sentence again. Food retail provides the average person that has money in their pockets, that allows them to access insurmountable, unfathomable amounts of value. So what is this value I'm talking about? Well, yes, just like any of you Namibians today, I was exposed once again to the Christmas Eve shopping that many Namibians converge upon. Many Namibians rushing to the malls, to the big retailers, rushing to get their supplies because they know, like we are trained and we've been programmed for the past 34 years in our life, that you don't want to see an empty or a ghost town on 25 December. You don't. You don't want to experience that. You don't. You don't want to be late for contributing to potentially one of the most family binding or family gelling sessions or days in the world, in the Christian world, rather, should I say. Because obviously, if you're from the Muslim or Buddhist or Judaic, you know, denominations, you obviously won't be celebrating Christmas with us. In the Christian world, 25 December and 26 December are those particular significant contributing days. But these 2 days are also known as the biggest money spinner days in the world. Now, I'm not saying, nor am I advising you, if you're sitting there wondering, how can I have a business idea in the 2025 or in the coming year? Because obviously a lot of you are still trapped in that particular, we call it in Afrikaans, rigmarole. You know, in English, the colloquial term there would be literally called, you know, caught in the maze of that particular trapped thinking that every 1st of January, I need to now just drop what I was doing back in 2024. And ultimately, I'm going to be a new butterfly in 2025. It doesn't work like that. Life really doesn't work like that. The indication is obviously working from this particular thing. If you're looking to strategize a little bit better, and you're trying to be someone that's looking at a sector that has the potential to carry something through, the retail sector provides that aspect. The retail sector provides that particular template. Now, there are mammoths. I can't call them behemoths. They're just big, because a behemoth is way bigger than a mammoth. There are mammoths in the Namibian retail sector. These mammoths work obviously on the basis of looking at the financial propensity or the financial carrying capacity coming through from the Namibian consumer. Now, consumption, dear listeners, is and will always be the particular indicator that I always look at. I always look at consumption. I always look at it. I don't care for a mining company digging a hole in the ground. You know why? Because I know you and myself, we don't have the money to go dig the hole in the ground. Neither do we have the money, for example, like what is classified within the Economic Bible that Helmut and I so graciously continue to learn every day from, the Guide to the Namibian Economy. We don't have that excessive, we don't have the deep pockets of trying to conduct, you and me, the average Namibian, we don't have the money to conduct a seismic survey in a specific exploration area. We don't have that money, and it's all in US dollars. You don't, and I don't, we don't have that money. But there are other areas that you can invest money in. There are. So many of Namibia's particular towns are underserved. I say this, and you will also agree with me. So many of Namibia's towns are underserved. Now, underserved, dear listeners, can be something coming through from the community itself. Can be something coming through from the regional or the local authority itself. Can be something coming through in the format of the central government itself not having a service distribution point in a specific community. Much of the accusations based upon that specific point has been, for example, like residents in the community of Gum. And the community of Gum recently received Namibians of, you know, Namibians from, but well, let me rather say, they were former Botswana citizens repatriated to Namibia. And these were Namibians who had been living there for 100 plus years because of Namibia's colonial chapter. They fled there because of the horrors that that were committed here before the First World War. They fled there. Now, they're going to be, some of them are going to be resettled within that, in and around that community of Gum. Now, Gum itself has continuously over the past 4 or 5 years brought up attention, or they've highlighted specifically needs for certain services coming through from the central government. For example, the issuance of national documentation and the likes, and other particular extension services. Yes, those are givens. Those are certain particular services that come through there. But there are things, for example, that community probably also needs to allow for further community development to come through. What do I mean by that? That community would need a local entrepreneur to just open up a corner shop. It could be a corner shop. In some cases, we used to call it here the Portuguese Namibian-owned businesses, you know, the ones that sell you chips and other particular deli products or other particular takeaway products. In most cases, it technically was like a takeaway self-serve situation. They would need extension services like that, or extensions coming through from a local private entrepreneur. They would need, for example, something like a hairstylist or a barbershop or a makeup technician to generate local economic value in that scenario. Now, all that I'm mentioning to you is like the smallest manifestation of the retail sector, because the retail sector that I'm highlighting here to you grew from somewhere. I mean, the guy that owns Pep or Pepkor, the South African, he was part of the guys of the Steinhaus economic or financial scandal that took place about a couple of years back. His grandfather started what we grew up with in terms of the overall scenario of the clothing retail chain known as Pep. We all grew up with Pep all across the country. You know this brand. This brand is as synonymous as Namibia is synonymous with droughts. That company is probably one of the first companies the first South African companies that have been here the longest in Namibia. We all knew about this. All our parents shopped there for our particular school retail needs. All our parents shopped there. Everyone has shopped there. And that shop started as a community enterprise in Kimberley. Started as a family-owned business in Kimberley. Do you know what that business owns? Do you know what that company owns now? Or the holding company of that company? Do you know what it owns now? It owns 2 electronics retail chains. It owns Incredible Connection and Hi-Fi Corporation. Now, I'll let that sink in, dear listeners, because that is 3 South African enterprises that also operate within Namibia. The idea for a Namibian to step into the space is not a folly, nor is it an idea that a Namibian cannot carry this weight, because we have a Namibian representative in that scenario, a hardware business. Technically, there's a food retailer already. So there's a Namibian hardware behemoth in their own right, and there's a Namibian food retailer in their own right. You know who they are. You know who they are. The one is actually an advertiser here of Namibian, the Voerman Brock retail enterprise. That is a Namibian space. Yes, it took them 100 years to get to the level they are today. The other one is known as Pupkovic Mega Build. They are at the level they are. Also, it took them 100 years. It obviously does not mean that your enterprise will have to take 100 years. We don't know. We don't know. The discussion that exists from this is, dear listeners, that when you've got to look at the Africanization of the retail space, of retail, the South African template has been studied across the continent. The South African template seems to be the most influential template across the continent. Reason being, dear listeners, our malls here in Namibia are positioning prime retail space, but the best investors into that retail space are all South African derivatives. They are all. There's but a few Namibian enterprises. But even in that scenario, for example, let's say an entertainment service provider like a cinema, it is by default or by extension a derivative from South Africa. It is a derivative from South Africa. Because the holding company for that enterprise functions under that of a franchise agreement from South Africa. The same too also for many of the eateries. All those brand names come from South Africa, and most of them operate under franchise agreements. Now, there was a study done in South Africa, dear listeners. Because if you're wondering, you know, with all this particular, you know, insight that I'm sharing here with you. If you were wondering, but Dwight, we're talking about modern scenario. I mean, there's the likes of Amazon. There's all these, there's Alibaba, you name it, all these particular, you know, what do they call it? Online-based retail distribution aspects coming about. Where's Namibians should be able to embrace these platforms. But you know what? They're not successful templates to start off on. Let me reiterate that point to you again. They are not successful templates to start off on. But before we continue with that point, dear listeners, we're going to take a short break and come back right after this ad break.
It's the time of year for festive savings at ShopRite. Discover merry deals and get big savings on all your holiday essentials. Shop and save on products like 1.6 kg Real Good Chicken Frozen Whole Bird with Giblets for only $78.99 and 1 litre Danone Ultra Mel Custard Flavoured Dessert or Variants for just $32.99 each. Give more this Christmas with ShopRite's unbeatable prices, making your holidays extra special. Offers valid until 25 December, only at ShopRite. Lower prices you can trust. Always. ShopRite's Lucky Santa gives you the chance to win your shopping for free. Simply purchase 3 participating products and check your till slip for details. Don't miss out. It could be you. Promotion ends 25 December. T's and C's apply.
This is a Drostehof live read. You know when you're having guests over? So you go to the shops to pick up the wine and then you just stop. So many choices. What if you chose the wrong one? Maybe go with the fanciest one. And they all look the same. Well, now there's a blend that you can be sure of that all your guests will enjoy. Next time, choose from Drostehof's range of expertly blended wines with their easygoing flavors. Find your favorite Drostehof blend in stores everywhere. Drostehof, welcome to our blend. Not for persons under the age of 18. Please drink responsibly. Now, coming back to your listeners from the extended ad break right there, and after obviously just we paying our particular bills here from an Eagle FM perspective, the point that I left off on just before the break was a significant point that helps to discern this particular viewpoint that since things are shiny and bright and it works in the United States and it works in the UK and it works in Europe and it works in parts of Asia, that maybe it should also work here. Not really. Not really. I say this primarily because there was a specific research that was done where they were measuring the purchase behavior of millennials. Now, millennials, well, let me rather state it like this as well. The age grouping or the age bracket that were measured in this particular research was between 18 to 35 year olds. Now, if you know anything about 18 year olds, not a lot of them have money on them, have a lot of money on them. However, as you work from 20 and upwards, you start seeing a trajectory or like a staggered representation in terms of earnings potential and spending behavior and the likes. Now, what they found out in primarily of these participants, and it was just 21 people that were measured or that were technically whose insights were sought, and they were obviously, you know, broken up into various focus groups. If you don't know what a focus group technically in research scenarios is like an in-depth discussion setting. So it would be like four people sitting in a setting. You know, you've seen focus groups before. You've participated in focus groups before. This could be anything around a fire, a braai, a couple of beers, or, you know, just you, a bunch of you, you know, a bunch of friends or a bunch of mates just sitting out there, you know, just enjoying each other's, you know, company in that scenario. And then you'd engage in the subject matter of the at the hand, you know, or at hand. And focus groups obviously try to collate in terms of as wide a spread as possible how participants feel about a specific thing. So what was measured here was consumption behavior or the retail behavior of these 21 participants in this focus group discussion. And they realized that for convenience sake, they measured the preferences of these participants up with what would you like to spend your money on? What would you trust? Going to a mall where you would find brick and mortar businesses. Brick and mortar is literally the physical distribution point of the shop. And you would spend your money there. Or would you prefer accessing an online retail platform? Now, for certain things, they preferred an online retail platform. And for certain particular products, they preferred the brick and mortar representation. For example, things like clothing. Things like clothing. Now remember, dear listeners, I did not just say the food retail sector. I said the full on retail sector. The potential is limitless. The potential is limitless. Let me read this in terms of this research. Brick and mortar stores are preferred to fresh produce, meaning if you're an agricultural producer, there is a guaranteed sense that your products will be bought. If there is a brick and mortar business or retail enterprise that buys your products to place them on display in their shelves, in their distribution points. Brick and mortar businesses or platforms are also, or stores are also preferred for high value items. This could be anything from jewelry to cell phones to computer products or to TVs. And usually in from the truest business or from the truest marketing context, you call it the consumer durable goods. Consumer durables can be anything from a car to a refrigerator, to a computer, to a laptop, to a mobile phone, to a washing machine, to a kettle, to a stove, because literally the thing is durable and it doesn't have a time frame in terms of when it gets used up. Yes, it does literally work down or work off its value, but in context, it lasts you longer than the initial investment you've made primarily in buying or purchasing the thing, for example, at the start. For example, so many people, well, not so many people. I actually grew up in a household where my mother would tell me, well, Dwight, you know, I feel so proud of my investment in this refrigerator or in this fridge because this fridge is older than you. I was like, wow. Talk about, you know, knocking someone's self-esteem when your mom compares your age with that of the fridge and she's more chuffed and, you know, proud about how old or how durable the fridge is, that the fridge never got a gas refill. let me reiterate that, guys. For the better part of, you know, for how old I was, or even during my developmental years, I never saw that fridge ever get a gas refill. That fridge was replaced when? When was it replaced? In 2010? 2011? That fridge was bought in 1980-something. Ne? And before I was even born. So when you're looking at these particular aspects, brick and mortar is the particular avenue for the aspect of development that I have been espousing and that I am, you know, a proponent of, because the need ultimately is there that firstly, there are Namibians that want jobs. There are also Namibians that have money in certain parts of this country, but they are not being served properly. Yes, guys. Yes. If you did not know, that's also one of the particular thinkings ultimately of capitalism. One of the salient, but holier than, slightly holier than thou. Well, not holier than thou. That is some misusage of that particular aspect. But it's more like a altruistic perspective that never gets associated to the capitalistic element of things. Because a government cannot bring you those things. A government cannot go and build a shop in a community, let's say in Aranos or in Arawap, and employ the store manager and the people that work there, because you and I would be shouting from the top of our lungs in terms of, but why do we need that? Are we becoming a particular, you know, if we can say for better part of this world, are we becoming that kind of a country or an economy wherein the government also needs to open up its own particular retail outlets? And you know what? There is such an example in the United States. It's known as Costco. If you ever wanted to look up to various templates that exist, Costco was opened up in the 1950s or just in the second half of the 1940s for government workers of the United States. You needed to provide proof that you were a government worker, and you had it's almost like an automatic membership situation, and you got discounted rates, meaning your food, anything that you bought, canned food, whatever foods, was close to 50 to 60% cheaper. Yeah, if you go look up this aspect of Costco, Costco in the United States is based upon a membership situation, was, or it started out on a membership situation. And it's literally a inflation beater. Now remember, dear listeners, the fancy terminology that economists love using, specifically like real inflation, core inflation, this kind of inflation, they're always throwing another particular terminology around somewhere about analyzing inflation. The clear-cut understanding that you need to sit here as the layman or the laywoman or the average person on the street, when you're starting off on 1st January and you're going to see some price increases hitting your way with some particular headwinds about certain adjustments being done, inflation is technically a transferred cost mechanism. So if the farmer sees my fuel is going to be more expensive in the new year, and I want to ensure as a farmer that my margin is insured for the rest of 2025, I'm going to top it up with 10%. It's going to happen. I'm going to tell you, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. There's no way that you can stop it. It's going to happen. Now, when you wake up on 1 January 2025, it will have already been tabulated in. The new prices would be set. It will be then be transferred down a supply chain until it reaches your favorite retail outlet. And in that first weeks of January 2025, boom, the shock would be there. The prices would have been adjusted. Now, usually, another particular thing known as the consumer price index comes about, which factors all that in. But just so that you know, for those of us that work in the private sector, It's all about ensuring that there's continued growth. So how do you ensure the growth is reflected? The growth needs to be ensured that it speaks to the earnings potential. Because no matter what you do, for example, let's say you in your own isolated world decide, you know what, I feel for my clients. So I won't install or bring forward a 10% price increase on across the board on my products or offerings. Someone else will do it. You cannot control what the person selling you a service to. If you're a business, you're here in the middle, you can't do anything about the person that's selling you a service to you because you can't control them. They would install or introduce that 10% price increase that side. Remember, you also have to factor in that there's this 10% is like a, sometimes they come to that 10% arbitrarily or ad hocly. There's nothing you can do as an average person. There is no legislation or law that exists to stymie or stop inflation from occurring. Inflation can even be transferred across the border from South Africa into Namibia. It can even be imported, for example, from Germany or from Belgium with all these particular industrial processes that are ongoing here in the green hydrogen sector, in the energy sector, you name it. It can, it will, and it will find its way coming through. It will. There's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do. Now, online, for those of you thinking about convenience and the likes, obviously not trying to think about the fellow Namibian that does not have a job or cannot find a job in the Namibian economy today, is that online retail experiences are kept or managed, for example, for budget-conscious purchases. Now, there is no explanation on the budget-conscious purchases, but we're obviously talking about things that, you know, you wouldn't mind, you know, spending a few monies here, a few money there. This could be things, for example, like e-books, or it could be something like trying to buy makeup in that scenario. Don't ask me why I used makeup. I went for something as small as possible within the cosmetic industry. And the cosmetic industry in its own right could be anything from cosmetic surgery to literally cosmetics, just pure cosmetics itself. So the realm out there, the playing field, the point of entry is limitless. It is limitless. It is limitless. I just saw now earlier today, just before stepping into the studio today, you know, someone that I know is complaining, for example, about the lines in Rundu. You know, the retail lines. And then there's obviously the stories I've heard from other Namibians who are currently at the coast about how overpopulated the coast is at this time of year. It's primarily one of the reasons why I don't like going to the coast at the end of the year. Because, well, it's a running joke that I have. Specifically, it's people that you are trying to get away from here in Windhoek. Now you go and bump into them there at the coast. And primarily you go like, ah, did I really want to see this guy also at the coast? It's usually those kinds of feelings. But there's nothing you can do because there's only one particular platform, you know, where you can try and unwind. These particular representations, dear listeners, obviously also mean that even the tourism sector is underserved, or parts of the tourism sector are underserved. Now, if you're going to ask me, Dwight, what I'm implying by this, is specifically that for now, there are only three particular coastal towns that serve the tourism sector in its own right. Now, remember, this is also an aspect of retail. Hentispy has got the lovely beaches, but it's got the worst town planning for a coastal town in the world. I don't know until today. I don't know what went wrong there in Hentispy. I'm sorry if you're from Hentispy, but really, you guys have to go into a lot of introspection there with how that town planning looks like. Really, really. You get to Swakopmund. Obviously, Swakopmund, you know, enjoys its unique particular culture, its unique particular facade, its unique particular, you know, that edifice that it presents there in terms of being this tourism hotspot or magnet that's caught between Victorian era architecture and the particular, you know, hotelier's paradise, supposed paradise that it is being matched with. You flow over to Walvis Bay. I don't know what goes on in Walvis Bay. I'm sorry if you're from Walvis Bay. You guys need a real investment in your particular sort of like tourism presentation there as well, because there's a lot more besides just having harbor activities. Now, the unfortunate thing about historically around the world, for example, now I'm still on anything and everything retail, is that a town like Walvis Bay should actually have had a complementing strong retail sector in that town. Now, it's also important to note that town also serves as a strong transport connecting hub. A strong transport connecting hub. This ultimately would mean that things like town planning, things like retailers, international and local and regional investments should have skyrocketed through the roof in Walvis Bay. But there's something off. There's something wrong. There's something not adding up. Walvis Bay should have had, you know, potentially multi-billion dollar investments happening there. Even though there is plans, obviously, for that, what they call that, Golden Visa Village situation to be positioned there somewhere in close proximity to the coastal town, to the port town itself. And it should ultimately be the same particular boom that Luderitz should see. Or will see. Now remember, Luderitz's discussion is a little bit more tricky. Why I'm saying it's tricky is because you've got to look at the room for expansion that the town is allowed. Running right around Luderitz is the historically known Sperrgebied. The same Sperrgebied that I and you cannot just go and gallivant there barefoot, you know, like a barefoot Namibian there about. You can't just go bushwhacking, because then you'll have the authorities on your case, because you might have trapped a diamond somewhere between your toes. Or somewhere in the soles of your shoe, or it might be in the tread of your tire. Or you accidentally hit a oryx there with your car and you are an enemy of the state now. Go watch that Will Smith movie. It's a very great movie. It came out in 2001. Enemy of the State. It's an awesome movie. If you wanted to understand how things like, you know, what Edward Snowden and Julian Assange them were writing about, it's literally what happened to that character that Will Smith portrays in Enemy of the State. Well, obviously, it's based upon a pretty linear storyline, you know. You know, being the mistaken guy, mistaken identity situation, and you're mistaken for being an enemy of the state, where you were just a guy that greeted another guy that was running away from the police and they dropped something in your bag. And boom. And yes, unfortunately, it was a retail bag at that stage for poor Will Smith's character. But in that scenario, dear listeners, the potential to expand the retail space in Namibia is limitless. What next is also for places like Gobabis. Now remember, Gobabis is the only urban center in the Omaheke region. Gobabis is surrounded by rural villages, farming communities that have clustered together between the farms, and that there are now obviously these connecting points. That kind of a situation is fertile for a retail experience to be entrenched in such a small region of Namibia. Lüderitz's situation will obviously cascade into the settlement of Aus, because Aus, as designated by the, you know, the start of this year's, let me say February's budget speech that Minister Shimi had, Aus and Lüderitz were designated and said, listen, here are development budgets for you guys for your planned expansions to be seen in the near future. Now, that announcement already should indicate that Lüderitz and Aus will cascade benefits, or what they call it, residual benefits, to Kitmanswip, because Kitmanswip is the administrative capital of the Karas region. That will also cascade into the other particular Karas regional urban areas, like Karasburg, like Grunau. I don't know if Ausenkir is a town. To me, it sounds like a farming community, big time. I don't think a place like Ausenkir should get that particular kind of investment for, you know, to try and justify it as a... Because, I mean, they just grow grapes. They just grow grapes. But there are also other particular plans coming about for the Orange River itself. So that still means that the Karas region in its own right is going to be the developmental boom that Namibia is going to see. It still is. And once again, the retail sector, from a Namibian perspective, not from a South African derivatives perspective, because those guys have the carrying capacity and the weight. If you find yourself today in Kitmanswip, for example, like many of those particular inhabitants that I've spoken to, who have said they are South Africans flooding across the river and buying up residential properties within Kitmanswip. If you're that kind of a Namibian that lives in Kitmanswip, you should have then gone and said, you know what, my guys, I'm going to open up a corner shop, because there's going to be more need. There's going to be more demand. There's going to be more particular, let me just be blunt, more money flowing Kitman's direction. Now, it would also make the case, for example, for Kitmanswip's airport. Now, I'm just giving you the dots in terms of how things would cascade and flow. For example, it would make a stronger case for a town like Kitmanswip to go and say, you know what, why don't you also activate the airport? For example, Namibia Airports Company, why don't you activate the airport so that airport also serves as a particular kind of a connecting point, so that you don't drive the 800, no, not 800 Ks, the 400 and something of almost 500 kilometers from Windhoek to Kitmanswip, where there could also be a flight directly to Kitmans. Then you can ride a bicycle from Kitmans to Lüderitz. No, I'm lying, guys. It's not a bicycle. it's not a bicycle ride. It's distance from Kitmans to Lüderitz. It's literally almost 300 Ks. It's an extensive distance. But the proposition is there. The template is there. We as Namibians, we are fixated on the particular procurement processes of the institutions in Namibia, the government institutions in Namibia. Sure, they do facilitate and help with a lot of particular local content participation. Sure, that is given. That is a guaranteed given. But the other particular social investment also comes about from the investment between an entrepreneur, for example, let's say you, starting out your corner shop or your family business in your community, and your community buying from you, supporting you, helping you, thus taking you to new heights. There was a community member that I grew up with. I didn't know this man. I just knew that there was this building there in the town of Rehoboth where I grew up in for, but I lived there for like something like 7-8 years of my life. And my brothers always spoke about this man, this previous business leader, local community business leader that was there. He had a nickname. Sorry for anyone that's quick or up speaking, but his nickname in the Rehoboth was something like Umnams, something like that. If it's something off, if my click was off, I apologize beforehand. So this gentleman by the name of Umnams, he went through a divorce. Completely taken to the cleaners by his ex-wife at that stage. Business was taken away from him and all that. He got back up on his feet and he did what he saw he was good at, firstly, but also secondly, what the community needed. The demand from the community. Sometimes the community doesn't know that there's a demand for this particular service provision. But he got back up on his feet and he opened once again the same business he had before, which was a retail outlet, a community shop. And once again, he flourished back again. So if you're sitting there wherever you find yourself, this could be anywhere, you know, Kahanyan, Ochibarongo, Rehoboth, Marintal, Hobabis, Tivundu, maybe. Obviously, I don't want to leave out Helmut's particular hometown. Wherever you find yourself, dear listeners, there will always be a need for retail. There will always be a need for further engagement on this particular subject matter, because this is the one sector that can bring you the development. It does bring you jobs, and it does bring you goods, and it does make money, and it creates business. It's not about taking a shovel and going to try and dig a hole to find a mineral, a precious mineral. There's a lot of complex regulations associated with it. But you know what? It's easier to open up a business or to try and become an entrepreneur in this direction than it is to achieve and become a mining magnate in this direction. Than it is to become a farmer in this direction. Because if you're not dealing with regulations and red tape and all kinds of laws and stuff in the mining sector, then you've got to deal and fight and combat the inevitable, the insurmountable challenge of climate change in this direction. But there will be, always, even as penniless as a 5-year-old Namibian. That 5-year-old Namibian can be a future local business leader. There is always an avenue in this direction for local corner, for corner shop businesses, mom and pops. I just wanted to let you know, dear listeners, what a mom and pops business also is. Mom and pops businesses is a small, often family-owned and operated business that maximizes its profits by providing personalized, interactive business and service provision to a community. It's a community shop. It's a community shop. It's not to say it's owned by the community. It serves the community directly. And guess what, guys? I've worked for such a particular enterprise and business owners before. The wife didn't finish, her own particular education background didn't take her past grade 3 in our standardized educational system. She didn't move, she didn't finish past grade 3. She married at a young age at 19. The husband, the dad went back to Portugal, sold the whole business out from under him, didn't even tell him that he's going back to Portugal. He had to stay here and fend for himself as a 16-year-old young man, a teenager, not young man, because young man would technically be 19, 21, but as a 16-year-old teenager, and he was literally forced to try and fend for himself, and he was forced to do the one thing that he grew up doing, to go and open up a community business. As a 16-year-old, I never understood it, but he explained it to me one day. Yes, it was over, like, you know, he had a couple of whiskeys, I was having a coffee and half a beer, but he was, you know, usually business leaders do that. They tell you, Dwight, I came through hardships, strife, strain, rain and shine, and I had to cut it. He didn't have PhDs behind his name. He didn't have other particular insights in educational backgrounds. No. He had to fend for himself. And that was literally, he told me, that was literally on the dawn of Namibia's independence. 1990. On the dawn of Namibia's independence. His dad sold up. There were, many of these particular, white Namibians back then who thought that, everything is just going to go to waste. Everything's going to collapse like many other templates in Africa. But look how resilient we were up until now. Yeah, because obviously I don't know what tomorrow brings. So I can say only up until now. The resilience that Namibia as a republic has gone on for so long. 35, 34, 36 years close to. On that particular template, dear listeners, what I'm illustrating to you is that the resilience is there. The potential is there. And specifically, the space for retail expansion, growth, development is there. I'm not saying go and be a Ramatex, please. What I'm saying is you can open up the shop that can buy from someone that is a seamstress or tailor out there. On that note, dear listeners, do stay tuned for the next ad break. We're stepping into the ad break. But after that, the business and economic segment team is in house. That being David and Kaveh. That'll obviously take you to the top of the hour at, is it 7, David? 7, right?
Yeah.
Well, you guys look enthusiastic. But on that note, do stay tuned, guys. Let's see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow. And enjoy the rest of your programming in our holiday programming here on Eagle FM. On that note, enjoy the rest of your evening.
Need lightning fast internet? Paratus has you covered. The network Namibia relies on. Whether for business or pleasure, Paratus' cutting-edge technology ensures both reliable and speedy internet connectivity. We exist to serve your needs through our high-quality network and pride ourselves in offering client service excellence. Connect to Paratus today. Visit us online at paratus.africa/Namibia or call us on 083-300-1000. Always prepare
Paratus. My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace. I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.